his words. His body remained poised, ready to act. Although Annalene didn't know what an unarmed man could do against the Tuscan woman and her band. The Tuscan woman. Annalene looked at Ayark, seen before through a mist of fire retardant and by others only amid panic. As far as Annalene had ever heard, Tuscans had distinct gender roles. Males fought. Women tended the banthas. The few images she'd seen showed Tuscan females dressed in even bulkier outfits, their hoods pulled down over large faceplates. But the one-eyed Tuscan before them was outfitted as all the others, save for the lack of bandolier. Ben pointed to the suns, creeping closer to the heights of the western Jundland. He spoke in simple terms, matching the Tuscans. You struck. The settler struck. The day ends. We will depart. He nodded to the east, where hooting and hollering had commenced beyond the hillside. We depart, and you depart, he added ominously. While you can. Ayark looked down at the Gaddurfi stick in her hands. It had belonged to her father, and it had not saved him. Nor had it saved her son. It was right to plunge its point into humans, to crush them with its bulk, to grind their bones with its flanges. Hairy Face Ben might have the power to kill her. She would die, but the others would live, and they would exact a price. But then, Ayark thought again of the magic weapon the man carried, and the last time she had seen one. She wanted to know more, but knowledge could not come from a dead wizard. And if the human cheers over the ridge meant the rest of the band was gone, then Ayark and the survivors could not linger. Ayark turned back to Adine. Handing her Gaddurfi to another, she heaved the corpse from the ground. We depart, and you depart, Ayark said, while you can.
"48," Mullen said. "48!"
Orin looked down at the canyon floor as he descended the rocky stair.
"That the head count?"
Mullen gave a laugh, a rare guttural thing that had always made his father cringe.
"I can't make any guarantees about body parts," Mullen said. "Some of the Tuskies that fell hit pretty hard."
Orin surveyed the scene. It was truly a mess. The trail of Tuscan corpses wound around the corner of the gorge and out of sight. He whistled.
I didn't think this many hit us at the oasis. There were some in camps east of the claim that Jayla G saw,
Mullen said, referring to their friend in the skyhopper.
I think they were in reserve to take captives, but when the Tuscans at the claim fled, they all went.
Most of the vigilantes had already made their way down here, making sure none of the injured sand people would come back to haunt them. Warren's daughter was here, too, trying her best to make her way through the organic obstacle course at the foot of the eastern rock face.
Disgusting, Vika said, holding her nose. Let's get out of here.
Before Orin could respond, a shrill beep resounded from his pocket.
Just a second, he said, pulling out the comlink. How's our recon, Sky One?
All clear, Master Galt,
crackled the voice of the Skyhopper pilot. Orin had directed her to complete a wide circle.
And it looks like you were right,
Jayla said.
Annie Caldwell and that drifter were here, but they've ridden off to the west.
The west? Orin's eyebrow rose. West to Ben's place, maybe? The claim was back to the north. He thought to go after them, but then an approaching group of celebrants reminded him of what needed to come next. Rifle-toting Jabe was among them, receiving backslaps from the older settlers. Orin clicked off the comm link and smiled.
You get any, son?
I did, sir. Or I think so.
Well, pick out a prize so we can go.
Beaming, Jabe stepped toward the twin tangles of metal. The vigilantes had piled the gaffy sticks and rifles separately. The boy looked back at Orin.
You think the one that got my dad is here?
Great sons, boy. I don't know. Just pick your favorite.
While Jabe deliberated, Orin edged back to confer with Mullen.
We need any of this junk?
No, we've got plenty.
Jabe reached into the Gaddurfi pile and found a silvery specimen, shorter than the others and relatively clean.
Vika laughed. Just your size, runt.
The others laughed at the blushing kid before surrounding him, offering congratulations. Orin looked back at the killing ground. The Tuscans deserved every bit of this, surely. His boy Varen, Danar Calwell, even that Lars woman, all had gotten some justice today. But Orin understood that squaring accounts here made for a change to the rest of the balance sheet.
Will Zed be ready to go again soon?
He whispered to his son.
I wouldn't count on it, Mullen said. Doc Mel only had a second with him, but he said he could be out for a month this time. Maybe more.
He raised a hairy eyebrow.
Why? Are you afraid this thing today will mess us up?
I don't know, Orin said.
He turned back to the crowd and locked eyes on Jabe. The boy always looked happy outside the store, but now he was positively over the suns. Jabe spotted Orin and raised his shiny trophy, earning another cheer from the others. Orin smiled back. The boy was really growing up. He joined the applause.
That's it, folks, he said, stepping into the crowd. First the racers tried to ruin our good time, and then the Tuscans. Let's get back to the claim and show him we still know how to celebrate.
Chapter 20.
With care, a Yark placed one rock upon another. It was important to select the right mix of stones. The pile had to last for eternity, holding the remains of a Deen above Tatooine's surface. Tomorrow's only matter to the dead. A Yark's clan did not bury their fallen, nor could they here in the shadows of the pillars, where the ground was tough enough to snap off the end of any pick. No, a Deen would lay atop the bed altar, protected from wildlife by massifs, the trained reptilians the Tuscans kept as camp guardians. His battle then would be against the suns, his spirit against theirs. Eventually, even the most defiant warrior's body would succumb to the wind. Then a new level would be built over his remains, the growing mound providing a tower to support the body of that warrior's sons or grandsons. But the graves of Adin's ancestors were far away, in a different part of the wastes. So here, in the evening shadows of this misbegotten place, a Yark silently built a solitary bier for a boy who had been warrior for less than a week. No descendants would join his tower, but his spirit would last as long as the stones of his resting place did. A Yark chose carefully. It was the work of a mother. A Yark was that, and a warrior as well. The traditional divided roles of the past were a luxury the clan could not afford. There simply weren't enough to fill them. All had changed after a single dread day 14 cycles earlier. Today's losses had been bad, but they were nothing compared with what had happened the day the clan battled the Hutts. The day Sherrod Het died. A Yark stopped sorting and wondered. It was safe now to pause and reflect. as safe as it was going to get. She thought about Ben's weapon and visualized the owner of the other she'd seen. Sherat Het was the Utman, the outlander of local legend, but to Ayark, he was a real being. He was in fact family, because of a different human Ayark had met first, Kishik. Ayark had been born as Kiyark, the youngest of six children. When three of her siblings died from plague, her father, Yark, repopulated his household through a time-honored practice, abduction. Kishik, so named by the Tuscans who kidnapped her from a local settlement, was nearly an adult when she came to live with Ayark's family. Ayark, still a child, was granted the privilege, too often a chore, of bestowing on Kishik the ways and words of the Tuscans. In so doing, Ayark learned some of the soulless breathings the settlers called words. She remembered them well, evidently, as the one called Ben had understood her today. Kishik had spoken many human words, most of them sad. Over time, Ayark realized her new sister had been living as a slave of the humans. Life with the Tuscans was not freedom, because the Tuscans were not free, bound and cursed as they were to inhabit the blasted lands. To Kishik, pale and miserable, it was almost more horrible than death. Ayark often expected her to vanish into the wind. But as a long chain of Tuscan torturers had found, where humans were concerned, fragile bodies often contained durable spirits. Yark allowed both Ayark and Kishik to learn the ways of the warriors. He had assumed, correctly, that Kishik would learn their ways faster, and had defended his daughters against all criticism.
"There will come a day when all must fight," he had told the elders. "We are too few."
While Kishik learned the Tuscan words, both sisters learned combat. Ayark saw that humans had great potential, as Kishik's talent continually amazed. But something more startling was to come over the horizon from the cities and into the Tuscan camp. A volunteer. Sherat Het had ventured willingly into the wastes, bent on suicide, or rather, on joining the Tuscans, which was much the same thing. A settler taken by force could enter the tribe, as Kishik had, but there was an important difference. The Tuscans had chosen Kishik. Sherat Het had presumed much, and had to be broken. Ayark's people certainly tried. But Sherat had survived the punishments and emerged stronger. The elders whispered he had been part of some ancient and foreign army suffused with powers from angry spirits. And Sherat carried a great and magical weapon, something no common settler carried. A shining green blade of energy. In time, Sherat earned the garb and Guderfi of a Tuscan, showing his face to the sky for the last time. He took fellow human Kishik as his mate, a match not of convenience but affection, and together they had a son, Usherat. But Kishik had not lived to see their child grow. Might against the enemy was one thing, but Tatooine posed threats of its own. Not long after her son's birth, Kishik disappeared into a sandstorm. Vanished into the wind. But Ayark had not grieved over the loss of her sister. The presence of the child had bound Sherat to the Tuscans for life. Freely using the terrible powers and weapon at his disposal, Sherat became a war leader, training his son alongside him. Ayark saw little of the humans in those times. With her permissive father dead, her lot became that of any other female in the tribe. She took a spouse, she bore children.
The group swelled as survivors of other clans joined, and for a time, the Tuskens were strong. Under Sherrod, structure had replaced chaos. Leadership, something every Tusken defied on principle, seeped into practice as Sherrod could have his way on any issue. They feared him, yes, but they also followed. Sherrod had never believed the Tuskens were a cursed people. With such a warrior, a wizard really, the Tuskens could escape their fate and become mighty indeed. But that too was presumption. For other forces existed on Tatooine, more powerful than any single warrior. The greatest of the Hutts, Jabba, had for some reason manipulated Tusken tribes across the Jundland into an all-out war with the settlers, a fight that had claimed the life of a Yark's oldest son, just 6 cycles old. An answer had to be given, and Sherrod had led her clan and others into battle against the Hutts. But Jabba brought many thralls to battle that day, and countless Tusken warriors died, including her spouse Dean. Sherrod had died too. Even Sherrod's son vanished, although no Tusken ever found the body. A bad omen, and it told true. The makeshift Tusken alliance forged by Sherrod collapsed, with the surviving clans melting away into the hillsides. A Yark, a mother holding 2 little children, found herself forced to hold together what remained of her tribe. The few warriors that had survived were damaged, physically and spiritually, able to carry Gaderfi, but unable to command others. Sherrod had left no successor. A Yark hadn't sought the role of war leader. There was enough to do, simply making sure the clan ate. But when no one rose, she did. It had once been her father's tribe, after all. They had seen her ride with warriors before. And more than ever, her decimated people understood the meaning of their creed. Whoever has 2 hands can hold the Gaderfi. Losses continued in the decade after Sherrod's death. A Yark had shared in them, losing another son, and later an eye, taken by infection after a wound. The crystal that now sat in its place had been a gift from Sherrod, but the greater blow was to the clan's spirit. When a mightier band of Tuskens vanished literally overnight several years earlier, leaving just the remnants of their camp behind, her group grew increasingly timid. A Yark had tried to revive their spirits by example, and later by daring exploits like the morning raids. After today, though, such things wouldn't be possible. The Shaper had no more clay to spare. A Yark stared back between the stone towers to the tents. Her people wandered wraith-like as if waiting for a final blow. There was no way to prevent such a stroke. Only 7 males of warrior age remained, those she had brought from the gorge, and they lived only because their cowardice had driven them to run the fastest. Of all sand people, a Yark had no objections to arming the rest of the clan, but even with a rifle placed in the hands of every mother, elder, and youngling, the prospects were poor. The Tuskens didn't train. All experience came from combat. They would die before they learned anything. No, it was pointless to resist. The clan would dissolve, its members drifting into bands where they would have no station or standing. Unless... A Yark looked up startled. Yes. When her people had been desperate before, Sherrod had used his powers to give them purpose. In fact, he had brought larger groups to his side. With a similar leader, the Yark clan might become more than the rump of a once mighty tribe. A Yark's group could become the nucleus of a second united front, crushing the settlers once and for all.
with another charade. With Ben. If Ben was another charade, the Tuscans couldn't afford to see him allied with the settlers, to be sure. But what if he could be made to join the Tuscans? He would have to be compelled. He'd already shown violence to her people inside the Oasis store. But compelled, how? Ben seemed to want to protect the storekeeper, but there was no chance of using the woman for leverage. Another foray against the compound was out of the question. Humans were odd creatures, forming attachments to irrelevant beings and things. Perhaps there was someone else Ben cared for on Tatooine that he would do anything to protect. Even if it meant becoming a Tusken himself. Eyes wide open, Ayak resolved to find out. Her exhausted body coursed again with energy and will. If a pressure point existed, a Yark would discover it and exploit it. But first, her youngest child had to be put to bed. Chapter 21. Ben had said little on the way home from the gorge. Annalene had been the opposite, asking one question after another as their speeder bike moved into the lengthening shadows of the western Junlin. What happened in the store with Ulbrek? What was the name that Plug-Eye, a Yark, said to you? And how did you recognize it, especially when you're new to Tatooine? He'd never answered, acting as if he couldn't hear over the whine of the bike. And maybe he couldn't. Annalene had driven slower and slower, hoping to disarm him of that excuse. It hadn't worked. "You're losing altitude," he'd said. "Well, I won't argue that." Annalene felt the weight of the day on her shoulders as she coasted toward Ben's hovel. "Here we are," she said, activating the brakes. Earlier, near the gorge, they'd briefly debated going back to the claim so he could pick up his EOP. But night was falling, and even with the local Tuscans seemingly at bay, it was still Tatooine. Other predators moved in the dark. "Thank you," he said, climbing off the hovering bike. She looked up at his house. He'd made a little headway in cleaning up the surrounding area, but not much. "I'll run in at dawn tomorrow to fetch Rue," he said. "You won't even know I'm there." Annalene climbed off the vehicle and followed. "You know my offer still stands if you want to save yourself a walk. My guest room's empty tonight. I'd love to have you..." "No!" Then, seemingly embarrassed, he adopted a calmer expression. "I mean, I'm sure your family and store will need all your attention after today. You don't need company underfoot." "I'll have it, whether I want it or not," she said, remembering the usual after-action routine of the vigilantes. Would they really expect a party in a Tuscan ravaged store? "Yeah, probably," she thought. "I'll leave you to it then," Ben said. He began walking toward his house. "I hope your patron is doing better." Annalene blanched as she recalled the sight of the injured Rodian. "Poor Bomer," she said. "I was thinking about him earlier, too. He always sat there staring. I never knew why. But I just imagined such a sadness in his life to make him sit there. For him to get hurt like that?" Ben stopped and looked back. "It wasn't sadness." "What do you mean?" "Well, I saw him today, and on my first trip there as well." Ben clasped his hands together. "I could tell. That wasn't sadness. That was contentment." Annalene stared. "How do you know?" "It's just a feeling," he said, blue eyes looking off into the setting suns. "But I've seen sadness before in all kinds of faces. Bomer was content. The drink you brought him in the morning, the table he sat at. It was his place in the universe. But he got hurt there, protecting the place he loved. I think he'll be okay with that." Ben turned and began walking again up the hill in silence. Annalene thought back to Ben talking about loss earlier in the day. He was struggling with something, she could tell. Something pretty bad. But at the same time, he seemed so centered. Centered in the middle of nowhere. She fumbled for words before finally settling on three. Who are you? He laughed. Ben, we've been over this. No joke. Annalene shook her head. Freelance philosopher of the desert, doctoring and rescuing. I don't think it happened that way. You'll remember it differently later. Annalene stood at the foot of the hill and put her hands on her hips. Well, you're wasting your talent out here. Someone like you, you ought to be doing something. She paused before going ahead with the impetuous addition. Or you ought to have a family to watch over. Ben paused. He looked over his shoulder at her, the little smile back on his face. Well, you never know. Perhaps I already have a family to watch over. Annalene rolled her eyes. She turned and climbed onto her speeder bike. Oh! Ben called suddenly. He reached into the folds of his cloak and retrieved something rectangular from his pocket. I just realized in the commotion, I still have your data pad. Keep it, Annalene said, grinding the throttle. Souvenir of a crazy day. But the safari, your application. I'm not going anywhere, she said. There's a new species to study right here. She released the brake and soared away. As stressful days for Annalene went, this one already ranked only behind Jabe's difficult breech berth. And it wasn't over. After Ben, she stopped by Doc Mel's place. Learning that Bomer was sedated and resting in Bastine, she returned home, anticipating a mess of a store, and another war when she found Jabe. He'd skipped out on work, taken up with trashy friends, and defied her by going after Tuscans twice. It was one thing to arrive butt first into the world, but Jabe was going for the endurance record. She wasn't surprised to see lights on inside the claim, with land speeders scattered about. What did surprise her was the claim itself, once she stepped through the door. Yes, there were drunkards celebrating, more than she'd ever seen in the place before, but the store itself was spotless. The gun counter and shelves had been repaired. The nasty smears on the floor were gone, and products were back on their shelves, reasonably close to where they belonged. The smell was even gone. Raising a drink from within a gathering of mostly male revelers, Lily smiled at her. Everyone who didn't go with the posse pitched in, she said. It gave us something to do. Annalene looked around, suspicious. She didn't trust anyone to be in her store without a Calwell present. Everything still here? We might have fed ourselves a little off the shelves, but it's a small price, no? Annalene walked up to her friend. Even for a Zeltron, Lily looked flushed. The party had been going for a while. Annalene recognized her friend's husband, Waller, in the mix, telling his own tales from the assault on the Tuscans. Who's with your kids?
The guard droids,
Waller called out, toasting with an empty mug.
Plug Eyes finished. The droids are all we need.
All we need tonight, Oren said, clearing his throat loudly from behind the bar. He was a startling sight, having donned his spare set of fancy city clothes from the office and an apron over them. Host and bartender, he refilled glasses with a smile. He spotted Annalene and nodded to the empty bottles. I'm keeping track. No, you're not. Annalene approached. Give me whatever's left, she said, settling wearily on a stool at her own bar. Oren was already pouring. You were out there, weren't you? He laughed. Annie, you're a marvel. What was it Danar said? You can't spell adrenaline without Annalene. Danar never could spell, she said, taking the glass. That's why he hired me. She downed the drink in 3 seconds and deposited the glass on the bar in front of him. Now, what did you think you were doing taking Jave out there? Orin's smile crumpled for a moment before a young voice saved him. Don't blame him, Mom. It wasn't his idea. Annalene glared as Jave stepped in from outside. The boy paused before Orin.
Well, Ulbrecht's gone, sir.
Blast, Orin said, shaking his head. I'd hope to rub the big victory in his face.
He looked around the room and raised his voice. Everyone knows the settler's call works now, right? This place is the proof.
A ragged, drunken cheer went up. Annalene ignored it. She slid off the stool and blocked Jabe from reaching the happy crowd.
Jabe, you have to stop.
Stop what?
I'm too tired for the list, she said, clutching at his shirt. But let's start with the gorge.
You were killing. Killing Tuscans.
The boy waved his hands theatrically.
They're not civilized, Mom. They're not anything.
You don't know that, Annalene said.
They're not womp rats that you can shoot for fun.
Jabe wrenched away from her grasp.
They killed Dad. They tried to kill all of us today.
I know.
But nothing. I at least did something.
Anger flared in the young man's eyes.
Did you do anything after Dad died?
Annalene froze, staring at her child. He looked more like Danar every day, even as he acted like someone she'd never met. I did do something after he died, she said finally. I opened the store the next day.
In a chillier tone, she added, like he would have wanted. Jabe pushed past his mother. She didn't stop him.
He paused at the bar to speak to Orin in a loud voice, for the benefit of his mother.
With Zed laid up? You've got an opening on your lead vaporator team. I'm available.
No, he's not,
Annalene called out from behind him. Drying his hands on a dish towel, Orin smiled awkwardly at the boy.
She calls the tune, son.
Sorry. Orin nodded to Annalene, who didn't respond. A moment later, Orin leaned over and spoke in lower tones. There's other ways you can help me, I'm sure. Annalene threw up her hands.
You can help him by cleaning up whatever's left of this place tonight. I'm done.
Grabbing a pre-packed meal from behind the counter and an open bottle, she pushed past her son and trudged through the crowd to her living quarters. The sound from the celebration continued to reverberate throughout the claim and into her household most of the night, but she didn't hear much of it. She ate wearily and dragged herself to bed. As her head hit the pillow, Annalene had one last thought, that she had not seen Callie since her return. But her body rejected any further worries for one day, and her mind surrendered itself to sleep.
Meditation. I don't know what you can see from where you are, Qui-Gon, but I doubt you missed today's trip. No, once again, I wasn't intending for it to be a big production. You don't have to tell me what our mutual teacher used to say. I don't crave excitement or adventure, or rather, I crave them not, as he would have put it. I was going to the store for water, on a day when nobody was supposed to be there. That's all. I thought my tricky moment for the day was running into the little old man from the incident at Anchorhead. He seems to be a regular at the claim. When he didn't remember me, I thought I was free. Instead, I got into a riot and a range war. And I forgot all about the water. And my EOP. Will there be a galactic incident every time I want to get out of the house? Because I can stay home in that case. Really, it won't be a problem. Then again, it was certainly good I was there, given what happened at the store. I'm not so sure about the second part of the afternoon, though. Heading off after Jabe. There wasn't any stopping what occurred there. It's so difficult seeing things like that and doing nothing. but I guess I'd rather see and do nothing than not see at all. I'm missing so much of what's going on in other places. I can't live blindfolded. It's not really the Kenobi way. Speaking of what I saw, I'm not so sure I liked the sight I saw of Orin Gault today. He had to save face after the compound was attacked. That much I understand. But he wields an awful lot of power here. These people listen to him. He must know that. There's responsibility that goes along with that. Maybe I'm being too harsh. He acted the way he did because his family and friends were in danger. But we both know where that particular excuse can lead. The Tuskens, well, that was another surprise. But maybe it shouldn't have been. I'd met the man Ayak knew long ago and heard the story about him later on. I'm straining to remember more details about that. Maybe later. Then there's Annalene. I was tempted to call her the intrepid Annalene just now, because she seems to be able to deal with whatever horror this planet can imagine. That's what I need to become. Absolutely familiar with all the dangers here. She takes them in stride. Not because she's fearless, but because she knows she has to go on to take care of all the people in her life. That's not a bad role model to have. I guess I can become the intrepid Kenobi if I must. If I'm going to go on, and we both know I must, I'm going to have to find a way to stop tearing myself up over what happened. There's pain, yes, but a lot of it lately is self-inflicted. Like this. You see what I'm holding here? Again. A last remembrance, I've told myself. But I'm putting it away now. And I would be a lot better off if I put it away once and for all and tried to go on. Like Annalene has had to do. I can learn something from her, I think. And yet, when I think about her, I have to consider... Wait. Hold on. Someone's here.
Chapter 22.
Kenobi.
Annalene rubbed her eyes.
What?
Kenobi, Callie said, beaming across a cup of blue milk.
That's his name.
What? Annalene glowered at her daughter. Annalene had risen at the usual deathly hour, remembering Callie's absence from the night before. But the girl was here now, at the breakfast table in the family quarters, wide awake, and positively quivering with excitement.
It's his name, Callie said. Name whose name? Ben's name.
Annalene stepped forward.
How do you know that?
Jabe called from the larder.
She went to his house.
Annalene turned toward the counter where Jabe had thankfully prepared her high-test meltdown calf. She downed a swig and turned back to the table.
Now, what?
She went to his house, Jabe repeated, bringing a plate to the table. Bleary-eyed, he looked as if he'd slept in his clothes.
Ben's house.
Annalene gawked.
Before I took him home yesterday?
No.
Callie dug into her breakfast as if nothing was wrong.
It was after he got back, while he was there, after you left.
Wait, you were there at night?
Annalene asked.
Alone,
Jabe added, drawing a glare from his sister.
At night? Alone.
Annalene's whole body shook.
With Ben?
Callie smirked.
Calm down, Mom. Your eyes are going all Rodian on me.
Annalene fought the urge to go outside and scream. Instead, she refilled her cup and sat down at the table beside a snickering Jabe.
All right, she said, rubbing the back of her hand against her forehead.
From the beginning. Subdued, Callie explained.
I took the light van out, like you'd said, to get rid of the bodies.
I meant we'd get Orin's hands to help do that, not for you to go alone. It was horrible, Mom. The smell was driving the Dewbacks berserk, and it wasn't good for me either. Callie's small nose crinkled. Once I got out there, I just unhooked the hover pallet and left it. Believe me, you'll never want to use it again.
One more expense.
Annalene frowned. And then? Then I swung past Hunter's Gorge, but it was all over by then. The land speeders were leaving, and I saw the two of you heading for Ben's place. I wanted to make sure you were okay.
So you followed us?
I tried, but your bike was a lot faster than the light van. When I got there, you must have already left.
If I was already gone, how did you know you were even at the right place?
Annalene asked. Callie pointed behind the counter.
You circled his place on the map the other day after you came home.
I could have been marking a Sarlacc pit to avoid.
But you weren't, Callie said.
And you told me about the curtain on his door.
Annalene scowled.
And you talked to him? I can't believe you bothered him at...
Oh, he didn't know I was there, Callie said. At least I think he didn't. I was kind of hanging around outside.
Annalene stood up abruptly, her chair squeaking against the stone floor.
You peeked in on him?
I couldn't see much. I don't care.
Annalene looked at the ceiling, mortified.
You invaded the man's privacy?
Jabe shook his head between bites. Glad it's not me this time. Callie sneered.
Shut up.
Wait,
Annalene said, turning.
You thought I was in there, didn't you?
In this man's house.
Callie blushed.
The thought did cross my mind.
So you listened at his door?
It's not a door, it's a curtain. And I didn't stay long,
her daughter said.
How long?
A couple of hours.
Annalene gawked.
A couple of hours?
I needed to make sure you weren't in another room, Callie said, smiling meekly. And it got interesting.
I don't care how interesting it was, Annalene said. You could have gotten killed out there at night.
But I didn't.
Annalene shook her head. There was never any good answer to that where her kids were concerned. They'd had the safety argument again and again. A danger survived was no danger at all, to hear them tell it. Moreover, intrusion on this scale was an entirely new entry in the portfolio of her children's misdeeds. And that made the episode all the worse.
What made Callie think that was acceptable?
Annalene found her chair and let gravity take hold. Callie took her mother's vacant expression as a signal to go on.
His name's Kenobi. Someone called him that?
He called himself that, Callie said.
I couldn't see who he was talking to, but he said it. He was just sitting there, talking about his day and the people he'd met and the Tuskens.
Annalene looked at her with skepticism.
You're not just making this up.
She tried the name out.
Ben Kenobi.
She'd known other customers by the surname over the years and seen it spelled several different ways on her receipts. Jabe dabbed up the last of the gravy on his plate.
Lots of Kenobis around. There's the couple near Bildor's Canyon.
There was that pod racer pilot,
Callie interjected excitedly.
No, he was immune.
Please don't start this, Annalene said. I already have a headache. Just tell me what he said.
All of it.
Callie's smirk returned as she wiped off a blue milk mustache.
I thought you wanted to protect his privacy. A little late now.
Speak.
Callie told as best she could what she could remember.
Ben Kenobi was upset about his trip to the claim. Upset that he kept walking into disruptions.
He was troubled by what he'd seen at the gorge. Who wouldn't be, Annalene thought. And he wasn't thrilled with how Orin had led the assault. Jabe rolled his eyes at that. And then he talked about
the intrepid Annalene.
And then?
Annalene asked.
And then nothing,
Callie said.
He heard me, or heard something. I dashed back over the hill to where I'd left the light van.
Jabe snorted.
Did he come out after you with a big metal cleaver?
No,
Callie shrugged.
Well, if he did, I didn't see.
She bit her lip.
But now that I think about it, earlier, I did see something.
Annalene was almost afraid to ask.
What? Well, he was sitting, like I said, with his back to me. And he was in front of this trunk. And I think he was holding something. Something special, I think. He talked about putting it away, and then he did.
Jabe stared.
What was it?
If I knew that, I would have told you, Callie said. Idiot.
Annalene sat back underneath the spell.
And yet when I think about her, I have to consider.
She looked up and sputtered.
What in the great pit is that supposed to mean? You sure he didn't say any more?
Any more about you, you mean?
Callie! No,
Callie said, leaning dejectedly with her elbow against the table.
And he didn't say anything at all about me.
Jabe smirked.
The ingratitude. After you let him save you and all.
Callie grumbled.
Yeah.
Annalene struggled to take it all in.
And you say there was no one else there? I don't think there was, but I don't know.
Annalene thought. He could have been speaking to someone on a comm system, yes, although transmissions from the Junlund were often problematic. Or he could have been dictating.
Or he could have that secret family he was talking about. Was that what Callie had seen him holding? Some possession that reminded him of the family he'd left behind? That might explain some of the sadness that seemed to hang over him at times.
Jabe had another explanation.
He sounds deranged,
he said, rising with his dishes.
Crazy kook, sitting in the wilderness, talking to himself.
You don't know that,
Annalene said.
And that crazy kook helped save us here. And help me track you down to the canyon.
Where I was in no danger at all,
Jabe said, wiping his hands.
You were in worse trouble out there alone with him.
Annalene looked down.
We weren't very alone when the Tuscans showed up.
I mean besides that, Jabe said. What do you know about this guy?
Not enough, evidently.
Annalene stopped to reflect.
After a few moments, she laughed. Don't you see, Callie? He heard you. He knew you were out there. That was all for your benefit.
Callie rose from the table.
Think that if you want. But I think Ben Kenobi thinks about you.
She patted her mother on the back as she passed. Annalene put her head in her hands.
I can't believe this. I've raised a sadist and a voyeur. Are both my children insane?
Standing in the open doorway with his sister, Jabe answered.
I don't know, Mom. You're the one who took off after the Tuscans with the crazy man.
As her kids headed off to work, Annalene sat motionless at the table.
He's not crazy,
she said, her face twisting into a frown. He just talks to himself. Setting aside her cup, she decided the matter deserved more thought. Then, she promptly fell asleep in the chair.
Chapter 23.
King of the Junlund!
Orin just nodded and waved as the family of four cruised past, cheering him as they departed the oasis. There was no use being modest now. The vigilantes had won a historic battle the day before, and word had spread across the region. Orin would see that it reached the Deveronians in Mos Eisley, too.
They'd know he'd avenge their partner without delay, and there might yet be hope for the hotel contract. Even after the late-night celebration, Orin had risen early in anticipation of starting his good day as soon as possible. So far, it had exceeded his hopes. Everyone around knew this was the day of the week he kept his office hours in the claim, and many had visited him. The plaudits from his neighbors were nice, but more important, people he'd intended to make calls on were arriving to subscribe to the fund's protection services. Success sells. He hadn't let anything get him down today. Not when Ulbrich had arrived at the claim after breakfast, armed with a new batch of stories with which to bore the clientele. Orin would wait to pitch him again on the settler's call after the man had run out of people to torture. Nor had his expensive meeting with Glomer, the mechanic, bothered him. It was funny that, while most of the damage the Tuscans had done to the claim had already been repaired, the most lasting harm had been caused when his spoiled daughter put Annalene's X-31 into the stone wall. Repairs would park Annalene's land speeder for weeks. Orin would happily loan her a vehicle from his work fleet. But he'd let Vika, whose Sportster was in even worse shape, find her own rides for a while. Maybe slowing down would be good for her. No, the only thing that attested his smile was old number one. His technicians were finding what he'd realized earlier. The vaporator mechanism had survived. Tough things, these pre-tormans. But Danar's precious settings had been lost. The first test vial had produced what Orin judged an absolutely pedestrian cocktail of two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen. Later tests yielded no better results and sickened his heart. But sorrow would wait today. Every visitor had brought him something. Business, congratulations, even a sugar cake. And now, as he saw another figure approaching on foot from the southwest, he wondered what good tidings this person brought. Orin squinted. Well, I'll be, he thought. He stood tall and waved.
Hey, Kenobi! Ben Kenobi!
For a moment, the hooded man appeared to disappear back behind the dune. But when Orin charged up the rise, he found Ben kneeling to adjust his boot.
I thought that was you, Orin said.
Ben stood. As Orin shook his hand vigorously, Ben said, I'm sorry, I thought I heard you say,
Ben Kenobi. That's your name, isn't it?
Ben looked down, around, and back at Orin.
Yes, but...
But what? Orin smiled.
I was just curious how you heard it.
Oh!
Orin laughed loudly and slapped Ben on the back.
You'll find out when you go inside.
He turned toward the store, coaxing Ben along.
Perhaps another day.
Ben pointed past the store.
I wasn't going inside. I'm just here for my EOP.
A high-pitched shout came from the claim.
Ben!
The men looked over to see Callie in the open doorway of the store, waving frenetically. Annalene stood behind her, looking a little embarrassed. I think you're going in, brother. Orin put his hand on Ben's shoulder.
Kenobi.
There was a Kenobi down around Arnthout, sold damper coils for repulsor lifts. You any relation?
Anything's possible.
Ben smiled narrowly, teeth clenched together, as Orin pushed him toward the doorway. Callie stepped outside to greet him. She smiled.
Rue's been waiting for you, Ben.
Annalene walked up, grabbed her daughter by the shoulder blades, and pivoted her 180 degrees. You, elsewhere, now. Callie looked back at Ben, flashed her teeth, and dashed happily back inside the store. Orin laughed. Ben looked to Annalene.
Really, I'm just here for the EOP.
Nonsense, Orin said.
8 settlers' call holdouts had wised up and joined up today. Maybe Ben was number 9.
A drink for our new neighbor,
Orin held the door open for Ben. The man stepped forward, only to be stopped by Annalene. She looked up at him.
Before you walk in, I just want to say, I'm sorry. I'm not sure what you have to apologize for, Ben said.
Then he stepped inside the claim.
Kenobi!
The man's eyes widened at the sound of the name called out by the clutch of people at the end of the bar. But Orin guided him inside. Lily Pace looked back from her packages and waved.
Hey there, Ben Kenobi.
By the sundries aisle, Doc Mel told his child.
There's that Ben Kenobi. I think he's a doctor, too.
And at the bar, Jabe contributed a glare as he wiped down the counter.
Crazy old Ben. Still talking to yourself?
Ben looked at Annalene, and then back at Orin. The visitor was slightly bemused, Orin was glad to see. It happened this way all the time. People came to the Oasis wanting to keep to themselves for whatever reason, not knowing that small-town life made privacy completely impossible. Seeing Wal Obrig approaching, Orin shot Ben an apologetic look.
You're the fellow from yesterday,
the old man said, tugging at the sleeve of Ben's robe like a tailor droid checking a seam.
You're a Kenobi?
Ben pulled his sleeve back.
I hired a Kenobi once. Gormal, they called him. Thief. Stank of spice all the time. I fired him quicker than you can say your name.
Well, I didn't say my name. To you, anyway.
Ben politely turned away.
Please excuse me.
Ulbrich followed him.
You saw me yesterday when them Sandies was here. You saw how many I put on the floor.
Ulbrich gestured to the tables.
Come tell the folks what I did. Some people won't believe an honest man.
Orin interceded.
Honestly, wow. Another time.
He peeled Ben away from the old man and guided him toward the bar. Sorry, he said, lowering his voice.
Some people will cling to you like Minox if you let them. It's all right, Ben said, his eyes settling on Callie as she chattered with some teenage friends. I think I know what happened now. I'm sorry, Annalene said. Callie came looking for us and ended up snooping. I'm mortified.
Orin gestured for others to leave the bar, making room for him and Ben.
Gossip gets around pretty fast where there's not a lot going on.
Ben nodded.
I would have thought the invasion and massacre would have kept the circuit going for a while.
Orin raised an eyebrow.
I wouldn't call it a massacre,
he said, his tone more serious. He didn't like that word.
It was justice.
Ben looked down, as if aware he'd spoken wrong.
There aren't innocents among Tuskens, Ben. We know that group was the one that struck us here. But it doesn't really matter.
They're predators. Same as a crate.
Understood. Orin waved to Jabe to bring over drinks. He didn't want to make Ben squirm too much. Not if he might subscribe to the fund. But he didn't mind taking the man down a bit either. Orin knew Ben's kind. Ben would play modest and detached until he had every woman in the Oasis interested. And then they'd find out he was trouble. Orin just hadn't figured out what kind of trouble yet. Callie's story, blabbed around the bar before lunchtime, added more evidence to the case for crazy. But Ben's actions the day before suggested he might be something else, maybe some kind of Clone Wars veteran who'd lost his nerve for fighting. That would track with a bleeding heart for Tuskens.
Change in tactics, then.
Orin took his glass and toasted. To keeping people safe. Ben nodded.
I can live with that.
Orin started his sales pitch anew. This time, he described the Settlers' Call Fund as the best hope for peace. If Tuskens were intelligent, as their encounter with Plug Eyes seemed to suggest, then maybe they could learn, Orin said.
If they learned every settler household on the desert was under the same shield, they might turn their attentions to the western Dune Sea.